is Over the Garden Gate, a program brought to you by the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Program of Tuolumne County. The mission of the UCCE Master Gardeners is to provide research-based gardening information to the public. If you would like to contact our Master Gardener Program, please call our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912. The hotline is not manned full-time, but we do pick up our messages and we will get back to you within the week.
Hello, everybody. This is Debbie Powell. I'm the Master Gardener Coordinator for both Calaveras and Tuolumne County. We are so fortunate for our virtual open garden to have Sue Mosbacher and Chris DeRose as our presenters for our topic called Preserving Your Harvest. We're all planning to have wonderful harvests, so you got to know what to do with it. And Sue Mosbacher is in charge of the Master Food Preserver Program and also the Master Gardener Program. At this moment, she is stepping in. Hopefully it's a temporary position, but she is the acting statewide coordinator, and that covers Sacramento, El Dorado County, Amador County, Calaveras, and Calaveras County. She was certified as a Master Food Preserver back in 2011, so she's got some experience under her belt besides all the other qualifying experiences. Chris DeRose, she retired in 2013, so in 2015, that's when she became a Master Food Preserver. She is a retired teacher. She's got wonderful experience. She moved to Tuolumne County, just to let you know, in 1981. And I believe Chris has been, for most of her life, been preserving food, but she's been certified since 2013. So I want to welcome them. And Sue, how about if you just take it away?
All right. Okay. So thank you guys for being here today. I'm excited to share the passion that Chris and I both have for food preservation. Normally, we could do 3 hours on each of these topics. We're going to try and squeeze everything into just an hour and a half. Debbie, if you could put in the chat box the recipe handouts. All right. Then let's move on. And we'll talk about dehydrating. And so with drying, again, remember, we're removing the moisture so pathogens can't grow. I need to turn my video on. And so the general temperature that is most commonly used is 140 degrees or less. It really depends on the recipe that you're following. Some of them are, you know, 135, some 140. With herbs, we dry them at 95 to 115 if we're using a dehydrator. So the big thing is you follow the instructions. And remember, if you're in a hurry, if you increase the temperature, you're going to cook the food instead of drying it. Just like you don't cut down the time for cooking a roast by increasing the temperature to 500, we make sure that we have a low dry temperature because the purpose is just to force the air to evaporate and not to cook the food. And dehydrating works best when we have low humidity and air current. We're very fortunate that we don't live in a humid environment because the purpose then is that the air circulation speeds up the drying and it removes the air around it. And you have to make sure that the air can penetrate the whole food piece. If you're drying blueberries, for example, the skin of the blueberry's job is to keep the environment away from what's inside. And so if you just throw your whole little blueberry on a dehydrator tray and let it dry, the skin is gonna dry, but inside will be moist and get moldy. So you need to make sure the air can get in there. So if you have a kid who needs something to do, you can give them a bowl of blueberries and a toothpick and have them poke a couple holes in each and every single one of the blueberries. Or you can drop them in boiling water just long enough for the skins to crack, and then you can go ahead and dehydrate them. And then the other thing to remember is that when you store them, air is not your friend. A lot of times people think that their crackers have gone bad because they're soft. No, they're just rehydrating. They're a dried food, and when you expose them to the air, there's natural moisture in our air and rehydrate. So we want to make sure we keep the air out of our storage. And so You can store them in a cool, dry, dark place, just like we do with our canning goods. You can put them in the freezer, use packaging that's designed for freezing, or you can put them in the refrigerator. So for optimum quality, not food safety, because they'll be fine longer. They just won't look as good. Fruit, you can keep it a year at 60 degrees if you've got a nice cool storage space, or 6 months at 80, and vegetables, it's about half the shelf life. And again, that's for the optimum quality. It's not a food safety issue. So here we've got some put in a nice freezer. And notice all the juices are on the door. All right, so when you're packaging, you want to use airtight containers. You want to make sure that they protect the food if you've got something that's crushable, if you've got zucchini chips or potatoes slices. And then you can use vacuum sealers as well. And one of the things I love is using my canister option on my vacuum sealer. And so what you do is, and this is where I use lids, you have a jar of a dried food, and these are nuts. You put your lid on top, and then this attachment here sits on top of this. You press the canister button and it vacuums out all the air. And then when it's pulled out enough air, it stops. And then you have a vacuum seal. And so you can't have any air go in or out of the jar. And so it really does a great job on keeping things nice and airtight. Okay, so different ways that you can dry food. And if any of you are growing beans, this is one of the easiest things to do. You just don't pick them. You let them dry. And when they start to sound like a rattlesnake, they're dry. So you pick them and then you take the beans out of the shell and you're ready for the next step. And I'll tell you about that in a moment. So vine drying is very easy. You can also do solar or sun drying. I'm not going to talk about that one here. You can also technically dry things in the oven. If you have a convection oven, that's fine because you have air circulating. But the recommendation is if you have a regular oven, you're supposed to first, make sure your oven can go down to the low temperature that it needs to. You're supposed to prop the door open and have a fan so it can have air blowing. And things take, you know, 10, 12 hours, and I'm not paying for the gas to have that happening with my oven. So it's not used that often. I know Chris is very fortunate. She has a commercial grade oven, and it has a warming tray that's always at about 100 degrees, and so she can dry things in there. I just stole your thunder. Sorry, Chris. You can also do room drying, and we're going to talk about that, and then electric dryers. Okay, so I want to have my picture on there already. Room drying herbs. So herbs, again, are lower temperature. You can microwave them, room dry dehydrator. If you microwave them, please read the instructions. Every microwave has different wattages, but you can actually burn up your herbs if you have them too high of a temperature and too long, because they are very fragile. So make sure you read the directions. We have one of our volunteers, Noreen, who uses the microwave a lot to dry her herbs, and she has beautifully dried herbs. So it works, but read the directions. This is also Noreen's herb dryer. You can just put your herbs out and hang them. This looks really pretty. You can buy inexpensive or more costly dryers. This thing here is a fish fry. You can get them for about $10. And it has netting so that you can hang your herbs up outside and just let them dry naturally. I'm going to show you what I do. I have oregano that's gone wild. I have lots of it everywhere, and I love using it in my cooking. So I will cut a bunch of stems. I rinse them and I pat them dry. And then I take a rubber band and I rubber band a bunch of them together at the ends of the stems. And I use a rubber band because as they dry, they're going to shrivel. And this way the rubber band will hold them in place. I've tried it with just a twisty tie and they tend to fall out because the twisty tie doesn't move. So after I've got them rubber band together, then I put a little twisty tie underneath the rubber band and I hang it up in a handled bag. And notice I have slices in the side of the bag. I just take scissors and I cut it and then I hang it up to dry. So now I have a way for air circulation to come in. I've got the bottom of the bag, so if anything falls off of it as it's drying, it doesn't land on the kitchen floor. It lands on the bottom of the bag. And then when I'm done, I just take it off and I remove just the whole leaves and I don't crush them until I'm ready to use them. And people always ask, well, how long does it take to dry? I think only a few days. I tend to put it up there and I forget about it. But you just check it, and the herbs are so thin that they dry very quickly. Okay, so after you do that, with room drying, with vine drying, one of the things that you need to do is make sure there's no insect larvae on there. And so once you've brought in your vine dried beans or your oregano that's just been hanging out in the bag, you need to, we call it pasteurizing. It's technically not, because pasteurizing kills pathogens, but it's the same concept and it's just the generally used term. But we pasteurize the room dried and vine dried foods. And so the simplest method is just to put it in the freezer and freeze it for 2 days, or you can put it in an oven and heat it, preheat the oven to 160 and keep it in there for 30 minutes. I prefer the freezer method because it doesn't impact the quality very much. If you think about it, there's no moisture in there, so the quality of the food or the texture of the food doesn't really change. But that way you don't have bugs that are surprising you and webs and things like that when you open it up a couple months later. And this is optional for other, if you use the electric dehydrator, because insects, the larvae are killed, it's either 100 or 135 degrees. And so if you're using electric dehydrator at that temperature for 10 to 12 hours, you don't need to worry about pasteurizing. Some people do, just because they do it for everything, it won't impact it at all, but it's not a required step. You just need to do it with room and vine drying. Okay, electric dehydrators. You need to make sure that you have a temperature control, a fan, and a heat source. And so I've got a couple of pictures of some things here. This will be faster than trying to haul everything out and show you over the Zoom. So this one here, the fan and the heat source are on the back and it blows forward. This one here, the heat source is on the bottom and then the heat blows up. One of the things that you need to do is to remember that the things that are closest to the fan and the heat source are going to dry faster than the things on top. So about halfway, you should rotate through. These are just manuals and these are digital versions. And then I have a version where the heat source is on the top. And again, the fan's gonna blow down. And so you need to rotate the trays on the bottom with the trays on the top. Excuse me, so you have things dry more evenly. Well, one of the things you may find in your basement or at garage sale is these old style dehydrators that just have an on-off switch and there's no thermostat. And you're thinking, well, can I use this? Pull out a thermometer, put it in there, let it run for a while and see what temperature it goes up to. You may be able to use it for some products, but maybe not for herbs, but you need to find out what temperature it's at. And this is a good idea to check whatever electric dehydrator you have to check the accuracy of the thermostat. And so one other reminder is when you're using your electric dehydrators, if you're going to be room drying things, you want to make sure that you slice your food in uniform thick slices, because that way they'll dry more evenly. If you have a mishmash of large pieces, small pieces, thick pieces, thin pieces, the thinner pieces and the smaller pieces will dry faster. And so you're either going to spend your time pulling out the tray, picking out the pieces that are dry and continuing to dry the others, or if you just wait till everything's dry, some of them are going to be crispy and shriveled up and pretty much only good for grinding up into a powder. And you want to make sure that your pieces are spaced out so that there is some air. I look at these and there is some air, but they were still a little closer than what I would lay them out, because you want to make sure that you've got plenty of air circulation. They'll dry faster if there's lots of space around them. Okay, how do you tell if it's dry? If it's fruit, you check, is it tacky? And I have, let's see, I'm going to stop my share for a second and show this. This is my little sacrificial piece of apple. And so you can see that when I fold it down, it does not stick to each other. And so this is dry, it's pliable and leathery. There's no moisture and it's at about 20% moisture, but the big thing, it's pliable, it's not sticky. And let me go back. All right, so that's how you tell that fruit is dry. And one of the things, and so here's a picture of some beautiful apricots. So one of the things that you need to do next is after you dry the fruit, you need to do something called conditioning. So first you wait about 30 minutes to an hour before putting it in any kind of packaging. Because if you put a warm product in a jar and seal it, you're gonna get condensation and defeat the whole purpose of drying this food. So you wanna make sure that you wait half an hour to an hour, make sure it's cool, and then you put it in a jar with shoulders and you close it. And if you get any condensation on the shoulder, it'll trap it, then you know that it's not dry enough. And then what you wanna do, let's see, will it work? Yeah. You wanna shake it couple times a day for 2 to 4 days. And in my house, my husband is fabulous. And he knows that if he finds jars of dried food or olives, when we're processing olives, next to his coffee maker at night, then his job is when he's getting the coffee ready for the next morning, he takes the jar, he shakes it, and he moves it to the other side of the sink. And then the next morning when he's pouring his coffee, he takes the jar and he shakes it and moves it to the other side of the sink. Best husband in the world. And so you want to keep doing that, because what it does is it helps equalize the moisture. Because no matter how hard you try, you're not going to get your slices exactly the same. Different pieces of fruit will have more moisture than others. And so what this does is it redistributes some of the excess moisture in some fruit into some of the extra dry pieces of fruit. And so it just balances it out. And so you do that for a couple of days. If it lasts that long, sometimes you just eat everything very quickly. All right, so that's the core basics of drying fruit. With vegetables, it's a little bit different. Here I have some zucchini slices. With a lot of vegetables, like if you were gonna do broccoli, dehydrating broccoli, I don't know if I'd do that. But anyway, carrots and things like that, you wanna blanch them first. And what blanching does is it destroys the enzymes that impact flavor and texture and makes them brighter color, and it protects vitamins and the color of the product. And so in the handouts, we have blanching times, and there's a couple of things. I know how to blanch. You put it in boiling water and you take it out. But there's a second step. You have to put it in ice, in an ice bath, because when you're blanching it, you cook it, and then you need to stop the cooking. So you put it in the ice bath. And so if the blanching time is 3 minutes, you're supposed to boil it for 3 minutes, you need to put it in 3 minutes also for the ice bath. And you want to work in small batches. If it takes longer than a minute to bring the water back up to a boil after you put your food in it, you've put too much in. So just put in small amounts at a time. So you have 3 minutes or however many minutes in your boiling, then you put it in your ice bath, and you can put another batch in the boiling, and you just keep drying, and then you can go ahead and put it in the dehydrator. So is the vegetable dry? 10% moisture and brittle. And so they're very thin, and I have, let's see, stop share. I've got a couple of things here. I have carrots. This is a dried carrot and a little carrot round. They are rock hard, brittle. I can break it. It's not going to be pliable and leathery. So they're very, very firm. I have some garlic. You can hear it. They're like little rocks. I like to dehydrate the garlic. And then whenever I want garlic powder, I just grind up a couple of cloves and I have fresh garlic powder, and it smells great. All right, let me go back to my screen. All right, so that's when the vegetables are dry. So do you need to condition vegetables like you do with the fruit? No, there's no moisture in there. So you do not need to worry about conditioning vegetables. And that's where you would put it in the jar and just shake it every day for 2 to 4 days. Once it's dry, just put it in your storage container and you're good to go. And then a real quick thing on rehydrating fruits and vegetables. Fruits, you're gonna just soak them in room temperature water. Vegetables, you soak in boiling water. And in the handout, I have a chart, and I'm gonna expand this in a second, on the recommended times to rehydrate. And a lot of times people will just throw things in soups and just let it rehydrate. Well, it depends on how the quantity of the quality of the fruit that you, the food that you want when it's rehydrated. So carrots, Noreen, one of our master food preservers, taught a class last year with others, and it was on dehydrating and rehydrating. And she did some examples where she was drying carrots and then rehydrating them. Some she would just throw them in the soup, heat it for 10 minutes and eat it. And her husband's like, this is like rubber. It was not very good. And so she actually followed the directions and she said, look at the difference it makes. So she wanted to experience what people do and then what you should do. And so this is what she does for carrots and it works great. So you're supposed to take your carrots and soak up for an hour. And so I'm going to show you here. So this is my little dried carrot, and this is what it is rehydrated. And when you rehydrate it, it is pliable and soft. I had put it in a little container with boiling water about half an hour before we started the session. And it's just nice and soft and pliable. My little dried carrot and my rehydrated carrot, nice and soft and pliable, and it's not rubbery when you cook it. One of the nice things about dehydrating food is this is like a 5-pound bag of carrots in a little teeny jar. And so when you get rid of the moisture, the space savings is great. And then things don't go moldy either. All right, so got that. So follow the directions and the recommendations. They're there for a reason because they work. Okay, so I have just a couple of quick show and tell things. Let's see, I showed my garlic. I showed the carrots, I showed apples. Okay, I'm gonna stop the share. And then I'm gonna show a couple things and then Chris is too. So I have potato slices and these are nice and brittle. But the nice thing about this is if you've got potatoes, can I call these carrots? These are potatoes. The potatoes are nice and thin, you can dry them. So if you get you always can get a great deal on potatoes, but you dry the slices and then you can easily use them to make scalloped potatoes, fried potatoes, so you can rehydrate them. You don't have to worry about the storage space. This was several pound bag of potatoes and it's, you know, in a little baggie. We showed the garlic. One of the other things is tomato powder. And so if you have tomato skins or soft tomatoes, you can puree them, make a leather, or you can just take the tomatoes and dry them till they're crispy and then grind them up into a tomato powder. And the flavor is very condensed. And some of the things you can do with this is if you want 1 tablespoon of tomato paste, you can make 1 tablespoon of tomato paste. You can use this to make some soup mixes to take camping or backpacking. You can sprinkle some on your eggs so you can have some extra flavoring without the moisture of having fresh tomatoes on there. You can add it to soups. You can add it to meatloaf. There's all kinds of things you can do with it. And then you're not wasting your tomato skins. You can also take your tomato skins and dry them until they're crispy. Add some seasonings to them before you dry them. And then you can have a tomato skin chip. Let's see. All right, so in the handout, we have the dehydrating basics, and it talks a little bit more about crazing the fruit, fruit leather, more on pre-treating fruit to prevent it from darkening, blanching times, and rehydrating times. And that will be on the website, and you'll get an email with all the links to where the files are. Okay, so now we're gonna go back to Chris, and she's gonna talk about some herb mixes, a little teeny bit about grinding herbs, and then she's going to show you a dry chimichurri sauce and having it rehydrated. So I'm going to send it over to Chris.
Hi, I'm going to show you some dried herbs and a chimichurri sauce. And I don't know if everybody can see me on the screen, it says stew. Can you hear me?
I can see you, yeah. You're spotlighted.
Okay.
I think.
Usually I see. Okay. The chimichurri recipe calls, I have lots of herbs growing and they take over my yard. Anyhow, this has parsley, oregano, basil, and cilantro dehydrated, and red pepper, or you can use chili pepper, onion flakes, and the only two powders from your spice cabinet might be the chili powder, or you could grind up your own, or garlic powder. So with salt and pepper, to make a chimichurri sauce, here is the reconstituted sauce. You're gonna add oil, your red wine vinegar, and your boiling hot water. So I'm gonna do half a recipe here. Okay, are we ready?
Yes.
Okay, so I don't think anyone heard anything. You have the recipe. It calls for 2 tablespoons of parsley, oregano, basil, and cilantro that you can dehydrate. Onion flakes you can dehydrate. You can make your garlic powder from your dehydrated garlic and your chili powder from dehydrated chilies and red pepper flakes. And you can use bell or hot. I have made a mix out of that. And here is my chimichurri mix. And I'm gonna cut the recipe in half because I've done it 3 times. It's the 1/8 cup. Then you have 1 tablespoon of red wine vinegar and 1 tablespoon of olive oil and boiling water. And let it sit for about at least a half an hour. I'm afraid my boiling water, I put in this for the demo. It's not that hot anymore. Just stir it up and let it sit and it will rehydrate. I have it in a freezer container labeled. I could freeze it, but I think tonight I'm gonna put it on some ribs. So here is my chimichurri that we made up yesterday. I've made 3 batches and it is ready to go. It's labeled and rehydrated very nicely. I did have some other spices. I don't know if we have time to show. Sue, should I show spices and peaches?
Yeah.
Okay. I know Sue already did. I got my peaches done last night. Here is halves. And in this container, there's a new from Kerr. And that is a brand, but it has the moisture packets and a little, this was for the wide mouth, a little container to put it in to keep it off your food. Some people sell the moisture, save the moisture packets from pills because they're pretty food safe. They're in there with your aspirin. So here's this was 1/2 peach. It was gigantic. Those were just made and those are ready to go. And I cut a few into slices. Nice little snack. So I'm trying these moisture packets this year. And I also have dehydrated onions, bell pepper, garlic, cilantro, everything I need for cooking, because you can add these to your favorite salsa recipe. Here's some bell peppers. You're not supposed to change the recipe, but you can by adding dried spices. I really like salsa. And red peppers, which you could grind up and make your own chili. I have I crushed my leaves. Mint from the garden, mint takes over. I love it in teas. I have a little tea bags to put those in. Onion flakes, of course you could add that to your salsa recipes. You saw garlic, mine I crispied up. Grind that up for your garlic powder. Cilantro, just have to not put off the stems. I did green peppers, make sure you separate the green from the white when you're drying them because they'll dry totally different. They're just like paper, parsley, and then I made some mixes. This is kind of a Tex-Mex, and I ground it up to fine powder. I love sprinkling that on everything. I'm really into Mexican cuisine.
You've been listening to Over the Garden Gate, a program presented by the UCCE Master Gardeners of Tuolumne County. I'm Linda Reevely. Thank you for being with us.